In the summer of 2008, the city of Philadelphia witnessed an alarming number of murders. To find out why this happened and how it changed his city, Philadelphia playwright Sean Lewis decided to interview prisoners, politicians, and pundits. The play that came out of this process is called Killadelphia, and it's been touring the U.S. We've reached Sean Lewis in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. Hello.
Hey, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm good.
So you've been performing the play for the first run. How has it gone so far?
It's been great. We opened up in Baltimore at Baltimore Center Stage about a month ago, and then we went from there to Lawrence, Kansas, and performed at the Lawrence Arts Center. Now we're gearing up to bring the show back to Philadelphia in the next couple of weeks.
So can you just start off by telling us what happened in Philadelphia last summer?
Sure. It's not even just last summer. Really, over the course of the past 5 years, the murder rate in Philadelphia has been really incredible. Last summer specifically, right when I had started the project, it was right about May, and there had already been about 140 murders that had happened in the city. The past couple of years, the city of Philadelphia has been averaging around 375 to 450 murders a year. So it's definitely, a city that, in terms of the violence and especially the murder rate, is really a state of emergency.
Wow. So I guess when was that moment that you decided that you wanted to engage with what was happening through a play?
Well, the project actually came to me. I was working as a playwright in residence at Interact Theater, which is a political and socially minded theater in Philadelphia. And Mural Arts is a program also in Philadelphia. There's about 2,800 murals throughout the city of Philadelphia. And what I didn't know at the time is most of these murals are actually painted by inmates at Greaterford Prison, which is just north of the city. And most of these inmates are also lifers who are in for murder and who are from Philadelphia. And so Mural Arts had come to Interact and asked them if they knew a playwright who might be interested in doing some kind of project where they would go in and work with the inmates and maybe teach some playwriting and acting skills to them and would talk with them and hear some of their stories and see if something could be made out of it. So really, that's how the project ended up coming back to me. And I said yes, and then started working on it pretty much immediately.
So what happened when you went into the prison?
It was fascinating and terrifying all the same. I'd never been in a prison. A lot of it was just a wake-up call in terms of, most of my opinions, ideas, even images of prison had come from television and film. So it was a lot of, going in and expecting it to be like what I'd seen in movies, and it's nothing like it. Even just on regular things, one of the things I talked about on the show is one of the first things I walked down was this long hallway that got flooded with inmates, and there was no bars that separated you from the inmates. It was kind of like a common hallway. And the guards also have no weapons or anything on them. So just in terms of even just the physical structure of it was not something I expected. And then when you get talking with the inmates themselves, just some of the stories, really the heartbreaking thing for me was, and one of the things I kept coming back to, is how young the guys I was talking to, not only how young they came into prison, but how young they got a life sentence. And a life sentence in Pennsylvania is different than in other states in the U.S. So in New York, where I was born, a life sentence doesn't necessarily mean natural life. In Pennsylvania, it does. So if you get a life sentence, you're pretty much determined that you are going to die in prison unless you get commutated. And I would say probably the youngest guy I talked to while I was in prison, while I was in Greaterford, the youngest guy, meaning how young he was when he received his life sentence, was about 22. I was talking to guys who received life sentences at 15 years of age.
Wow.
Which was just, yeah. it's hard not to just kind of get knocked back when you're thinking that a judge looked at a 15-year-old boy and decided he did something so horrible that he can never be released. That he's gonna spend the rest of his life there.
So what kind?
That was definitely huge.
What kinds of stories did they tell you, and how did you incorporate these stories into this play?
Well, there's a massive amount of restrictions that were put on me going in. I mean, the things that made it difficult, and in some ways even things that helped and enlightened it that I didn't expect. Like, you know, I wasn't allowed to bring anything into the prison beyond mainly like a pencil and notebook paper. And then the stories that I was told, I wasn't allowed. It was a weird catch-22. I wasn't allowed to ask them about their crimes for the sake of victims. And of course, and I had to change names and everything like that, which all made sense. But they could talk about their crimes as long as I didn't ask them about their crimes, but then how that made itself into the piece became tricky as well. So a lot of the stories in the beginning started with me kind of just really just talking to them and opening up them, getting them to talk about the art program first and restorative justice, like how mural arts had helped them or hurt them. I was really trying to go in. I knew very little about mural arts, so I was going in very just kind of open, no agenda, just asking, like, so what's this program about and how does it help and who's part of it and what does it do for you? And then as more trust grew, you know, and also even as they got just comfortable with you, I learned so much when they actually would forget I was there. Meaning, like, when they would just be doing the art projects or when a guest artist would come in and work with them on, like, making a collage or an arts and crafts project, which they do sometimes, just seeing the way that they interacted or how they talked with each other or even, the guards became part of the show. You know, it was a lot of when people just were... Moments that they thought were mundane became, like, very theatrical and dramatic moments for me. You know, it's such a loaded and high-tense and high-pressure situation that really anything that wouldn't seem commonplace for us day-to-day is, like, a huge deal there.
Now, in this play, you actually play a whole series of characters. Can you just tell us how this works and tell us about some of the prisoners and the characters in your play?
Absolutely. I interviewed about 15 to 20 of the lifers involved directly with the Mural Arts program. In the show itself, I play about 6 of them. And it was a lot of just, you know, getting vocal rhythms down and having been with them and really just, I mean, the language of the inmates and everyone that was interviewed is verbatim taken from them. So it's their own words and me really trying to replicate those moments as honestly as possible. And so what ends up happening, the show is really my journey kind of entering the prison and all of my preconceptions going in and what I thought this piece was going to be, and naively in some ways how I thought I was going to help I went in thinking, I went in very naively thinking, like, this is going to be simple. I'm going to write a play and I'm going to solve, you know, this major problem. A massively naive idea on my part. And then it became a lot more about how I was wrong in that and how much more complicated these things are. So it becomes a lot of me talking at playing myself and then moving into these actual moments that happened with the inmates and conversations I had with them, and then conversations that happened out in the community with people as well about what they thought about inmates and about restorative justice and about what was happening in the city.
So was there a specific prisoner that stood out to you or specific story that you tell that was inspirational or extremely compelling for you?
Definitely. I mean, there was a lot of stories. There's two that always kind of, that were just huge moments. One was, there was an inmate named Bobby that I worked with, who I play in the show, that when I would do the exercises, I would come in probably for about a week to 2 weeks doing kind of just writing exercises and acting exercises. And he would always do the exercises, but he wouldn't involve himself past that. And they didn't have to. I mean, everything was voluntary. And he was very nice and genial, and then whenever I'd ask him if he wanted to do an interview, he would never want to. And then the very last day I was there, he sat down with me and we got talking, and like the stories that he found out were amazing. Like, what I found out from him was, while he was in prison, he had been incarcerated when he was 15 years old. And while he was actually in prison, when he first got sent in, the warden of the prison taught him how to box, because this was in the 70s. And he really, the warden just felt that if he didn't learn how to defend himself at 15 years of age in a maximum security prison in general population, that it was going to be really bad. So they taught him how to box, and Bobby got so good at it and so focused and determined at it that it got to the point where they started sending him from the prison to nationals, like to the general national amateur boxing championship, to the point where he even ended up fighting Muhammad Ali while he was in prison.
Wow.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was just such an amazing, and it was so amazing to talk to him about it. That was so great because, like, his face, I mean, this was a guy who was very reserved, very protective of himself. I mean, 53 years old at this point. He's been in jail for 38 years, you know, and we got talking about him. You could see him really, really become that little kid, you know, talking about him. He had all these pictures. Like, he came in the next day, and they had a prison newsletter. And in the newsletter, there was all these, there was a couple of photographs from Sports Illustrated in the 70s of him when he was a kid standing toe-to-toe with Muhammad Ali. So he came in showing me these photographs and these newsletters, and it was just like, it was just kind of amazing. And then I'm a big boxing fan, so it created like a very quick bond between us because we started talking about him. And I started to find out that before they got rid of the boxing program, he had been a big advocate of the boxing program, clearly. And before they got rid of it across the state, across statewide in Pennsylvania, he had ended up training three guys who had gone on to win, like, world championships, like, who had been professional world champion boxers. Like, he trained a guy named Bernard Hopkins, who has to be arguably, like, the best defensive boxer in history, while he was in jail. And like, so that's one story that I was just, like, it was just amazing, you know, beyond the realms of what you could possibly imagine. He was really, really fascinating. Then there was another guy. John, I talked to, who he started doing the painting program at Greatford because he didn't have photographs of any of his family members while he was in jail. So he was going there to learn how to paint so that he could paint portraits of them, so he could at least have that in his cell block because he didn't have photographs of anybody from his past. And that was just one story that just kind of, I don't know, there's something so beautiful and sad tied within that. And, like, just the fact that he's been in the program for years, and he was showing me, like, the progression of his paintings, of how when he started out, like, he couldn't master these at all. And even how some people have slipped away, I found really fascinating. He was like, he showed me one painting, and he was like, no, I'm good enough for some of these. You know, he showed me one painting, it was great. It was an amazing portrait. And he was like, that's exactly what she looks like. Like, that one I nailed. And then he showed me another, and he was like, and her, you know, I just didn't get good enough fast enough. Like, I can't remember her. So he's like, you know, she's just kind of slipped away. I can't really remember what she looks like, so I can't really paint her. Which just seemed like a huge analogy for his life in a lot of ways, for the life of a lot of these guys, just like people slipping away and not being able to make that change fast enough, or feeling like they can't make that change fast enough, and people just constantly disappearing from their life.
How has this play and making this play changed the way you think about prison and crime and imprisonment in your city?
It's made it very, not gray, it's definitely opened my eyes to a lot more. I feel a lot more educated about it. I mean, the things I didn't even know when I was living, like, as living in Pennsylvania, about, like, that you could be 15 and receive. I mean, I ended up living in Pennsylvania as, like, one of the highest incarceration rates, especially in terms of life sentences for youthful offenders, which is just, like, shocking and terrifying. I mean, it's kind of unbelievable when you're talking to some of these guys who just be like, he's been in for 30 years and, you know, has been a model citizen, and he came in when he was 16, and he's never going to have an opportunity to even come up for parole. Not even talk about getting parole and getting released. Like, the possibility of him even having the opportunity to argue for it is gone. I mean, his life is definitively determined to stay there. I mean, that was one thing that I just didn't... I mean, when you're not paying attention, how do you know? You know, like, it wasn't something that I really had paid attention to. Like, I've always had very liberal... I mean, I have a liberal-leaning kind of political background. And, but at the same time, it's like, that's fine, you know, to be humanist, but at the same time, like, if you're not aware of it, you're just as ignorant as anybody else. And then going out into the community was interesting, too, like, forcing myself to get different opinions from my own, you know, talking to pundits and politicians and really pushing to see what is the multitude of voices talking about this? So it wasn't really just one-sided. I mean, I learned really quickly in interviewing the inmates that I couldn't really perform this piece in good faith without talking to victims. And then the fascinating thing was a lot of the victims and the inmates really were arguing and talking about needing the same things, which I found really fascinating.
What do you hope audiences get out of watching this play?
I hope a big thing with me is I'm really hoping that it opens people's eyes just to their own communities. A big thing that I do towards the end of the show is I make it very specific to each city I go to, meaning I have all the statistics of every city that I perform in. So that it's not, I mean, this is not a problem that's just Philadelphia. This isn't a problem that's just the United States. I mean, this is happening everywhere. So it's a matter of bringing the numbers home and really, after having these people meet human beings that are going through this, then giving them the multitude of numbers, because I think statistics and numbers just kind of wash over us if we don't have anything tangible, you know, to relate it to. If we don't have a human being or a person that we've met that we can really relate it to and say, well, that seems like a good person, or that seems like they're trying, or that seems like this, then it's just a number. So there's a lot about trying to break down what we have just as statistics. Like, I run through numbers throughout the entire show, and it's really to try and break down this kind of apathy towards just numbers, and also just kind of simplistic thinking of just, I believe this, even though I haven't really looked into this, which I think is an easy thing for everyone to do. I do it. So there's a lot of that, even for myself, of like, how do we challenge ourselves as a society, you know? It's a big question, you know, of what is the city we want to live in? Is it a city where people are good or bad? Is it a city where people can change, or is it a city where the best that we can do is to protect ourselves? You know, do we believe in forgiveness, or do we just believe in punishment? It becomes this, and there's a lot of gray in there, but it's really about trying to burst through that to get to, how do we make the city better?
Well, Sean,
how do we heal?
Thank you so much for joining us tonight, and good luck with the rest of your performances.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been a pleasure, and happy to get the word out.
Great. Sean Lewis is a writer and performer in Philadelphia. We reached him in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania.